Also, Rav Shua said I can mention, I don't know if people saw the email, but there's a whole campaign going on. So it's a good idea to be an ambassador for the shul. I'm going to be an ambassador because I have a lot of hakaras hatov to the shul and to Rav Shua. So I feel like, and I like our kiddushes. I like our coffee before shachar. So I'm happy to help out with a fundraising for the shul. But encourage all to if you're able to. Yeah. And with that, we'll get into it. So basically, for a few reasons we'll go through, I decided not to do a David Hashem Ari. I had a bunch of reasons for not wanting to do it. The first is that Tehillim chapter 8 has been on my mind for a while. And like in the introduction to A Lonely Man of Faith, Rabbi Soloveitchik talks about how he says, okay, like this is a lecture, but that's kind of a misnomer because really what I'm doing here is sharing a tale of a personal dilemma. I'm just confiding in everybody, like kind of relinquishing that heavy weight that's been on my mind. And if you relate to what I'm saying, great. And if not, then like whatever, that's your problem. But I do feel like you will relate to what I will be sharing. Tehillim Ches has been on my mind a lot. That's one thing. Another thing, Rabbi Nachman, he talks about how there are certain people that they're praised for their ability to deliver a Torah lecture without any prior contemplation, without any preparation. And Rabbi Nachman says it's not that impressive. It's not that exceptional. That's pretty standard stuff. Why? Because when you're giving over Torah and you didn't prepare, so it's not you. You are just like a vehicle. You are a merkava through which Hashem is sharing Torah. So all you're doing is opening your mouth, and Hashem is flowing through it. You're not doing any of the work. You're actually very lazy. You're the opposite of exceptional or impressive, because you're just this conduit for Hashem's Torah. It's kind of like there's a jazz musician, Lahavdil, named Keith Jarrett. So he was saying like, what's in? People are smiling. You've heard of him? But so he's very famous. He played with Miles Davis. He's very a hush of jazz artist, pianist. So he said that what's improvisation? It's that the music is playing through you. You're not actually doing anything. It's just you are this conduit. You just start moving your fingers, and then things just start working out well. So that's what Torah freestyle is. It's not really coming from you. It's not so impressive. And Rabbi Nachman actually he says I have a proof for this. So Hashem prepares his Torah. How do I know? There's a verse in Iyov that says that Hashem prepares his Torah. It says that Hashem ra'ah, that Hashem first sees an idea, then he's yisapra, he gauges the idea, then echina, he measures the idea, and then chakra, he probes the idea. So the same way that Hashem prepares Torah, we're not better than Hashem, so we if Hashem could prepare, then we could study and research and clarify before giving over ideas. So I was thinking like, how do I shtim this? How do I reconcile this with the fact that I don't have the best work ethic? I'm good at a lot of things. I'm not being low self-esteem right now. I'm good at a lot of things. I don't have a good work ethic. That's one thing I'm not good with. So how do I reconcile that idea of Rabbi Nachman on preparation with my natural proclivity, which is to not prepare? So I prepare by, whenever I learn, whenever I'm on the subway, whenever I'm sitting down, I have nothing to do, I learn Torah, and that's key to my preparation. So Tehillim Ches, I've been preparing for a while because it's been on my mind and I've been going through the Perek. That's that. And I do want to mention one more thing before getting into it, which Rachel Leah actually emailed me very recently. It was very neat, and we have to do more research to find out more of the details of this case. But what happened was there's a machlokas whether or not you say L'David Hashem Ori or not, whether you say it at all in the month of Elul. Some people say you don't say it at all. Other people say you say it, but only till Yom Kippur. And other people say you say it until Shmini Atzeres. And there was some shul in London in the 20th century that there was a fight between the Chazan and the Gabbai. Rachel, I forget which one it was, but one wanted to say it, one didn't want to say it. I think the Chazan did not want to say it, but the rabbi, Gabbai, wanted him to say it, and he refused. He got terminated from his employment as the Chazan of the shul. And then he litigated this in civil court in London for a wrongful termination. And I don't even know what the holding was. I don't know what the judge ruled in the end. But we're gonna have to do our research. We're gonna have to go mining in wherever they store these cases. But the judge said, "Why wouldn't you just say Psalms 27 every day? It's like really, really beautiful. I don't even understand why you're debating, Yom Kippur, Shmini Atzeres. Not just say it every day of the year." And I think some Sfardim actually do have the minhag. Rav Avadi Yosef said that you should say Psalms 27 every day. So okay, we have the whole year to do Psalms 27. It didn't need to be done right now. But anyways, I thought I'd share that because Rachel emailed me that and it was interesting.
I heard they reinstated him. I don't know, Rachel,
Huh.
if I heard it from you, but Johnny was talking about this at some point in the last week. So FYI,
They reinstated him. Okay.
as far as I know, and I can only imagine how embarrassed that must have been for the
And
situation.
just
He is a hill
yes.
of gem. I mean, it seems terrible to do that to a civil court, to two Jews.
Yeah.
Please.
I agree. I agree.
It's
As I say, d horrible.
disclaimer,
there's an Yisroel Kolos. You're not supposed to go to civil court unless you have to. You're supposed to settle things in a beis din. It's a little bit Chilul Hashem, but whatever. I thought it was a very funny story, and it originally came from Rabbi Jonathan Sacks. So yeah, he worded it in like, his like proper British, and very eloquently. I worded it like whatever. But anyways, okay, now we'll get into Tehillim chapter 8. So you could whip out your Tehillim chapter 8s. Or you could not. Doesn't really matter. I feel like I'm clear. You'll get the idea either way. Okay, so I'll start off. It starts off Lam Natzeach al Hagidis Mizmer LeDavid. So let's start off with the first word Lam Natzeach. Lam Natzeach comes from the word Netzach or Lenatzeach, which is it means bright, victory, endurance, success, perpetuation, all of those synonyms. So that's one thing it means. And it also means Lam Natzeach would mean like a director or the chief composer. So that's Lam Natzeach. Then you have two words later, Hagitis, and that basically all the Mefarshim say refers to as Gas, which we've discussed in our first shiur. Gas was a location in Israel. It's where the Philistines were dwelling, and Goliath was from Gas. And why does it start off Lam Natzeach al Hagitis? Because this is referring to the director or the chief composer who composed this entire psalm with Gas, which was either an instrument that came from the town of Gas or it was like a very popular instrument in the town of Gas. But either way, that's what it's referring to. And you'll see this throughout the Hillim. There's Lam Natzeach, there's the director or the chief composer, and then it lists eight different instruments. Do people know the other ones? There's neginas, there's machlas, there's alamai shir. Different instruments, nechilas, shoshanim, shminis, whatever, different instruments that a lot of the psalms will be introduced with. So this one is being introduced with the instrument of Hagitis. I don't know like the panini behind that, like what's like the deeper philosophical significance of specifically the instrument. Maybe there isn't one. Maybe it just sounded very nice, but that's what it's talking about. Also, Gas is the place where when David HaMelech recaptured the Aron after it was stolen. So they needed to take a small break and they stopped in Gas. So maybe David HaMelech composed it there. So that's another idea. Also, I just learned yesterday there's a word, it's in like the popular parlance. People say like gas or gas. People have heard this term. Like I was eating like hickory barbecue chips, and then somebody's like in law school was like, dude, your chips are gas. So I looked it up. It means like they taste good. I don't know. It's You've heard of it?
Yes.
I don't know. But anyways, it's good to know you. I want to keep up. So gas. Okay, so it's a good niggin. It's a good psalm. It's gas. Fine. Now we'll get into the second verse, which is really where Tehillim gets started. This chapter gets started, and there's a lot to unpack there.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, go for it.
You're talking about instruments, and obviously instruments are mentioned a lot. And when we talk about Tehillim and David HaMelech, and also that these were sung by the Levium. Some of these were sung by the Levium in the Beit HaMikdash. Were all of Tehillim written to be accompanied by an instrument, or were they written with instrumental accompaniment? Do you know, have any background on that?
So, for one thing, there are ideas like why does David HaMelech introduce some of the psalms with these instruments? So the idea is, yeah, like maybe he was playing them with the instruments, and there is an idea of singing. We say Mizmor Shir, Shir Shel Levim. There is this idea of singing the psalms. There is an idea actually that when Mashiach comes, every single song that think about any Jewish song you like, it's gonna go away. It's not gonna be a thing anymore. Also, like, a lot of Tanakh is going to go away. A lot of the Psalms are going to go away. But what's going to stay? Mizmor Lesoda, which is Tehillim Kuf. That one's going to stay. So there's a Jewish composer, Shlomo Yehuda Rechnitz. His initials are actually Shir, and he's composed a lot of good Jewish music. He composed a song for Mizmor Lesoda. Why? Because he realized, okay, I've composed all these great Nigunim. You've heard of many of them. But he realized, okay, when Mashiach comes, lost the level, all these Nigunim that I composed are going to go away. They're going to fall into oblivion. So I need to compose a Nigun for Tehillim Kuf, because that's the only song I had that will actually remain forever and ever, and wants to be relevant, So that's all I know in terms of answering that question. Okay, so now we'll get into the second pasuk, which is really starts off this Tehillim, which is Hashem Adonenu Mo'ad Yerushimcha B'chol Ha'aretz. So Hashem, our master, how great is your name upon all of the land? Asher Tna Hodcha Al HaShamayim, who has covered the heavens with his splendor. There's much, much to unpack here. So let's unpack with the first word, which is that it starts off with Yud Kei Vav Kei. And the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, that name of Hashem, you look in so many of the Kabbalistic sources, it's agreed. Yod Kei Vav Kei is the unutterable name. It's the ineffable name. You can't actually say it. We don't know how to pronounce it. And we don't even, we say Ado, whatever, Nai. We don't even go for the whole thing. And actually, there are some people, you'll hear them say like Adai Shem. So the Kitter Shulchan Aruch says, don't say that. He thinks it's a mockery to say, I don't even know what you would say. I guess you'd say Hashem, but he doesn't like the idea Ado Shem. But whatever it is, we don't say Yod Kei Vav Kei. It's beyond human cognition. It represents Hashem that is transcendent, the very distant Hashem. Right, that's Yod Kei Vav Kei. But then right away, Dovid HaMelech says Adonenu, our master. So that's more of personal language. So we're going straight from this very distant God, this guy in the sky, beyond human cognition, transcendent. And then right away we say Hashem is our master. So yeah, still in the relational hierarchy, Hashem comes out on top, but still, he's not entirely distant from us. There is still this relationship that exists. So that's what you have when it says Hashem and then it says Adonenu. But then it gets even more close because we say, Mo'ad Yerushimcha, how great is your name? Your name, that's very personal. Because that there, we are referring to Hashem in the tense of, is that a first person? I forget what's what. But like if I say you, that's second person, right? Yeah. We're
Yes.
referring to Hashem in second person. That's very, very personal. So that barrier of Hashem, that very transcendent, ineffable, complex God, is shed a little bit. Then you have that barrier of Adonenu, where we're a little bit closer to God, but still he's our master. There's more distance. And then you have Shimcha, which is your name. We are literally speaking directly to Hashem. So it's kind of like, let's say, I'm going to use Rachel as an example, but let's say you meet Rachel the first time and she says, my name is Mrs. Pfeiffer. Okay. Then you get to know her a little better. She says, okay, call me Rachel. Then you get to know her a little bit more. And then she says, people call me RL. That's just like my nickname. So it's different levels. And, first we know Hashem as this Yud Kei Vav Kei, very distant. But as you get to know him a little bit more, you realize Adonenu. And as you get to learn him a little bit more, it's Shimcha. So right away, we had this full spectrum of how to relate to Hashem off the bat in this Tehillim. Same thing when you make a bracha. And this is something that's really changed the way I made brachas when I learned this. Anytime you make a bracha, you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu, and it's the same exact thing there. You have that Atah, which is you, we're speaking directly to Hashem. You have that Yod Kei Vav Kei, and you have that Elokeinu. The same thing here. You have that Shimcha, you have that Yod Kei Vav Kei, and you have that Adonenu. So you can think about that every time you make a bracha, that you are referring to this dual relationship of with, that you have with Hashem, where Hashem is very far, Hashem is very from, but he's also Elokeinu. He's also relatable. He's from and relatable. One more idea, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan says something very neat in his book on Jewish meditation and tefillah, where in the bracha of Magen Avos, we say that Hashem is a melech, Hashem is a king, very distant. Then he's an ozer. What's an ozer? It's a helper. So something's going on in life, you need somebody to help you, you reach out to somebody, and they have that helping hand. Then there's a moshiach. That's a saving. That's much more than helping. That's like they're really going out of their way, they're really there for you through and through. And then you have magen, that's a shield. That's like the closest type of connection you have to Hashem. That's where like there's literally this life force surrounding you, kind of like the earth is surrounded with the orbit. Like that's like Hashem is like the shield that is attached to you at all times. And that represents the spectrum of the relationship that you could have with Hashem. So we see that entire spectrum in the second verse of Tehillim Ches. We translated just the first half of the second verse, but then you have the second half, which is Asher Tzmah Hodcha Al HaShemayim, that Hashem reveals, or Hashem's greatness is manifest in the skies. And this represents Hashem's greatness being unreachable. And this introduces a paradox that we're going to go through in this Tehillim, which is that Hashem is in the sky. Hashem is very distant from us. And then still, we have the third pasuk. What does the third pasuk say? Mipi olim v'yonkim yisarata oz. We'll just cut off there and then we'll continue the rest of the verse later. But from the mouth of babies and infants, Hashem establishes his strength. So this is referring to like a certain awareness of Hashem that stems from the most infantile, that stems from the most simple minds. Hashem is instinctively felt by all people. It's so intuitive. There's nothing more frustrating than when an atheist speaks to like a Chabad Chassid, because the Chabad Chassid will say to the atheist, "You believe in God, it's just very intuitive, and you're not like very in touch with yourself. Maybe you need therapy or something." It's very much gaslighting. Because they'll say, "No, you do believe in Hashem. You Olam Hashem's strength is established within the mouths and babes of within the mouths of babes and infants, and you just have to like tap into that." There's also an idea by Zalman Shachter Shalomi I was reading, very interesting, that you'll have a lot of similarities between ancient Near Eastern religions and Judaism. So he said, because Lamaisa, there's a medrash that when Hashem offered the Torah to all the other nations and they all said no thank you, and then the Jews ended up saying yes, but still like a few cute ideas here and there kind of crawled into their culture. So it's just so intuitive, it's so instinctive to believe in Hashem and to believe in his strength, that it's this universal instinctive thing. So that's the Mipi Olam V'Yom Kim Yisarta Os. Then you have the rest of the verse, which is Leman Sorerecha Lahashbis Oyev Umiznakim, that it's referring to terminating, to putting an end to the enemy and to the avenger. So there's an idea by Rav Kook that he says that in his book Arpi LaTohar, where he says that if you don't, you shouldn't complain about atheism. Instead, you should increase your faith. You shouldn't complain about the negativity in the world. Instead, increase positivity. So the idea is through Mipi, through the mouth of our infantile understanding of Hashem, through the most simple part of our being that understands Hashem's greatness and strength and existence in the world, what will happen naturally, what will dissipate is atheism. Naturally, what will dissipate is all those that don't believe in Hashem, or all those that struggle with Hashem. The negativity diminishes mimela automatically through us just establishing Hashem's strength, which is established instinctively in our minds. Okay, then we get to the next verse. Ki Eres Shamecha, Maaseh Etzbiosecha. When I see your skies, the handiwork or the fingerwork of your creations, Yareach v'Kochavim, the moon and the stars, Asher Konanta, that you have affixed. So here, Dovra Melech is referring to Hashem, how Hashem ever so carefully, ever so fancily, so sophisticatedly, so precisely created the world. He cared about the smallest of details, the little nooks and the cracks. Hashem took that into account. Maaseh Etzbiosecha, the small fingerwork, his handiwork. And that's like this idea that, like, I heard this from Rabbi Hirshel Schechter, he's one of the yeshivas in YU, or the main one. So he said that, like, you think Hashem doesn't care about the small stuff? You think he cares if, oh, I forget to daven one day? You think he cares if, oh, what difference does it make if I, you know, I quickly do Borer on Shabbos? No, there are 200,000 neurons in the brain of a butterfly. So Hashem does care about the very small stuff. All these little small things, Hashem really does care about it, and it does matter.
That's too many.
But still, when we say, Ki Eres Shamecha Maaseh Etzbiosecha, David Melch recognizes that when I think about this, it kind of engenders in me like this immediate reaction of questioning human existence, because Hashem's creations are so majestic, they're so amazing, so intricate. Hashem put a lot of thought into it, a lot of work went into it. And what's man? Man is rima v'sala. We're gonna say that on the high holidays. Man is worm and maggot. Like, Hashem created these beautiful things, then he created us. Why would he do such a thing? And that's what David Melch asks in the next verse, in Pasuk Hey, where he says, Ma enosh ki sizkarenu, what is man that you should take a note of him? Uvein Adam ki sifkidenu, what is the son of man that you should pay heed to him? Meaning, human existence, relative to everything else, seems odious. It seems insignificant, irrelevant. It seems so transient. Why would Hashem waste his time with such a futile, such a insignificant creation when he also created all these other great things? What's the point of all of this? And in the next few verses, David HaMelech evaluates what the significance of mankind is. He sets up this question, and then he evaluates what the significance is. And you see that in verse 6, 7, 8, and 9. So we'll start with verse 6. V'tichasreu me'at me'elohim, v'chavad v'hadar ta'atreu. Does anyone know why I said me'elohim? I didn't say me'elokim. The reason is because here, Elohim,
Not
yeah.
referring to Hashem.
It's not
Is it
referring to
referring to
Hashem, yeah.
Hashem?
What's it referring to?
A God? A God?
The Mefarshim, a lot of them say angels. You'll see this a lot in biblical literature where the angels are called Elohim. It's just because, like, you know, they're more superior. Just the example that comes to mind, just because it's one of my favorite verses in Tanakh, in Sefer Bereishis, is the name Yisrael comes Kisharisa ima lokim batucha, that you contended with the angel. This is referring to when Yaakov fought with the angel, batucha, but you prevailed over him. So Elohim does not always mean God. It could also mean angels or other things, just a master, somebody higher. So what David HaMelech is saying here is that, okay, we're not the best of the best. Yeah, Hashem has all these great handiworks. We're not like the greatest, but we're not terrible. In fact, we're only a little bit lower than angels, and angels are pretty significant. So, okay, we're not as great as them, but we're a little bit lower, and that has to be worth something. That's what he says in verse 6. Then, verse 7, David HaMelech says, Tamshileu b'maisei yadecha kol shata sachas raglav. That you have given us rulership over all of the works of your hand, all of the creepy crawlies that crawl under our feet. So when you think about it like this, yeah, Hashem created all of these things, and we don't think that we're worthy of being created relative to these things, but we are the guardians of these things. We are the guardians of Ma'aseh Yetzer. We're the guardians of Hashem's handiwork. So we must be not nobodies because Hashem didn't trust us to watch over everything that he created. So that's also important for us to know. That's very humbling, and that's very what's the word I'm looking for? That's very like I feel very honored by that. That like Hashem entrusted me to like watch, safeguard his world, and to do the right thing. Hashem put that trust in man. So man is worth something. He didn't give it to the angels. He gave it to us. So clearly we do have this unique value that the angels don't have. And more than that, in verses 8 and 9, Sone v'alafim kulam begam bahamos sadai, all of the sheep and the oxen, all of them, and all the beasts of the field, and the tzipor shamayim, and the birds of the skies, udege hayom, and the fish of the sea, over arches yamim, that swarm across the ocean. So all of those things, we have dominion over it. So it's very humbling because we realize, yeah, like we do have a purpose here. We don't possess the inherent right to power over these things, but Hashem gives us the power over these things. So we have to use the natural resources properly, use it in the framework of halacha, use it in the framework of morality, and recognize that this is a privilege that Hashem conferred to us. So we're not a nobody. Yeah, we're not angels, but we're greater than the beasts of the field. We're somewhere in between. Then you have the last verse, and we're going to dwell on this for a little because it's very neat. And this last verse is what's
Oops.
called an inclusio. David HaMelech finesses an inclusio, meaning the last verse, Hashem Adonenu Ma'adir Shimcha B'chol Ha'aretz, it's a copy and paste of the second verse. So an inclusio in literature is essentially when you open and close with the same verse. And the whole reason why a poet would do such a thing is because it shows the essential idea that's being inculcated to the reader. It's showing that between everything that we've discussed in this psalm, between the animals, between the humans, between the angels, between the creation of the moon and the stars and the fish and everything, between all of nature, between all of existence, you have Hashem Adonenu Ma'adir Shamcha B'chol Ha'aretz. Hashem envelops everything. Hashem is this grand, great master that envelops everything that exists in the totality of existence. There's a Gemara in Shabbos, and I think it's gas. It's a gas Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches. Basically, what happens is when Moshe is Olam Haram, Moshe goes up to receive the Torah, to study the Torah, and bring it down to earth for us to accept. So the angels ask Hashem, "Ma lilud isha benenu? What is somebody that was like born from a woman doing here? Like, what are human beings doing here? I don't. Moshe doesn't belong here." And Hashem says, "He's here to receive the Torah, because it's going to be given to Bnei Israel." And the angels start protesting. They say, "Dude, the existence has existed for like 1,000 years, and you haven't revealed the Torah yet, and now you're going to reveal it to people? Why would you reveal it to human beings? They're rima v'sayla'ah, they're nothing." And then the angels say, "Ma enosh ki sizkarenu." They quote David HaMelech. They say, "What is man that you should take note of him? Vein adam ki sifkedenu. Why should you like be so mashiv? Why should you honor man with giving them the Torah? The Torah is so holy and man is so ill." So Hashem says to Moshe, "Defend yourself, defend your people." And Moshe says, "I'm not so down to do that." Classic Moshe Rabbeinu answer. He's not so down. And then Hashem nudges him a little. So Moshe says, "All right, fine. I'll argue with the Malachim." And Moshe asks a series of questions to the Malachim. First, he says, in the Torah, in the Luchos, the commandment says, "Ani Hashem Elokecha, I am God who took you out of Egypt." And Moshe says to the Malachim, "Were you ever taken out of Egypt? Have you ever been in Egypt before?" And they said, "Nope." And then Moshe continues, "In the Torah, you have a lot of rules. One of them is you can't worship foreign idols. Have you ever struggled with worshiping foreign idols? Have you ever been in an environment where you felt pressure to worship foreign idols? And they said, no, because we've been in heaven. Everything's good here. God is clear. And then he said, okay, what about los signo? What about the fact that you can't steal? What about los sachmo? The fact that you're not supposed to be jealous. Have you ever struggled with these things? Have you ever felt the urge to steal something, the urge to kill someone? Have you ever felt the urge to commit adultery? Any of these things? And the angels respond, no, we haven't. And at that moment, the angels say, okay, Hashem Adonenu, Mo'adir Shimcha B'chol Ha'aretz. Emphasis on Ha'aretz. God, our master, how great is your name among the land? Meaning that, yeah, Le'ba Shemayim, the Torah is not meant for the skies. It's not supposed to be monopolized for the oligarchs up in heaven. No, it's meant for the hoi polloi on planet Earth. That's what it's meant for. It's meant for human beings. So they concede at that point, and then Moshe gives the Torah. This reminds me of there's a saying by Chazal that b'kol makom sha'ata motzei gevurasa shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in every single place that you see Hashem's greatness, sha'ata motzei, there simultaneously, you could also find anvusanuso, you could also find Hashem's humility. Because Hashem is so great, Torah is so great, yet Hashem brings it down to earth, he brings it down to the aretz for us. And you have the same thing in the Mor Nevuchim, where Maimonides is describing the angels in Yaakov's dream that are going up the ladder, down the ladder. And Maimonides says that the language in the Torah is meduyak. It's very precise. First, it says that the angels were alo. Then it says that they were yarod. Why? Because the idea is that first the angels went up, and then that's where they received the Torah. Okay, but that's not enough. You know, you go up to your supernal realm, you go up to the ideas of, you go up to your inner chambers of thought, but at some point you have to bring the Torah back down. You have to bring it down to planet Earth. You don't want to get too stuck in your head. You got to bring everything down. It has to be relatable. It has to be from and relatable. And that's what Tehillim chapter 8 is really getting at, which is that Hashem is so great. And how great is he? He's so great that as great as he is, simultaneously, he could lower himself, kivyachol, to anthropomorphically speaking, to our level. Hashem is from and he's relatable. That's the idea of Tehillim Ches. That's what I got.
Beautiful.
Cool. I'll say one more thing. I love that a piece from Mor Nevuchim because I think about this a lot. And I think when I first started teaching Torah, I still do speak kind of quickly, but that's my pace, and you just have to listen more quickly. But I always tell people, like, you're gaslighting me. I'm not speaking too quickly. You're just listening too slowly. But like Torah needs to be relatable. Like if you have all these ideas and you're using all these big vocab words and you're talking about Kantian constructs and how they relate to halacha and people don't know what you're talking about, it doesn't mean anything. Rabbi Nachman actually says this. He says in Ilkutei Maran, it says that he told some of his students, any great, supernal, amazing, fantastic thought that I had that I never revealed doesn't even come close to the most simple of thoughts that I've had that I've revealed. Meaning Torah is only significant in as much as you reveal it. Torah is meant to be revealed. It comes from the language of lehoros, to teach, to give over. So we can't get so stuck in our head. We can't be using all these fancy terminology that nobody has what we're talking, knows what we're talking about. No. It has to be relatable, and Torah is only insignificant in as much as we're able to convey it to others, in as much as we're able to reveal it to Haaretz. So yeah, we recognize it's in the Shemayim. It's also on Earth. Yeah, it's in the Shemayim, but you have to bring it down to planet Earth.